My name is Eric Masoni from Chesapeake Public Defender's Office. I represent Ian Carlson. Before I begin, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
5 minutes, yes, sir.
Yes, Your Honor. If I may begin, may it please the court. This case involves an unlawful entry into the curtilage of Mr. Carlson's home in order to smell for marijuana. In this case, the police had a general idea that there was marijuana located in a trailer park. In fact, the evidence was that it was so overwhelming they couldn't tell specifically which trailer it was coming from. And in order to resolve that, they essentially trespassed on the curtilage of each individual trailer until they got to Mr. Carlson's trailer, and then began to sniff in the vents, door jams, etc. of that trailer in order to determine if there was marijuana located inside.
Given that this was a trailer park, it was all curtilage, I suppose, except for the walkway to the front door.
At least ambiguously, I can't say for certain, but certainly when you're actually literally sniffing around it, around the side adjacent to it, I don't think anyone in this case at trial disputed that it was the curtilage where they were located. In order to have done that, the police needed both probable cause and a search warrant or a warrant exception. Regarding probable cause, they did indicate that they smelled marijuana.
Yes. Counsel, the trial court found that it was an unlawful entry, didn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so.
All right. And the Attorney General never filed any cross appeal, did it?
No, Your Honor, they did not.
So why do we need to talk about probable cause, exigent circumstances, any of that? Because the law of the case is it was an illegal entry.
I'm happy to move on, Your Honor. I just wanted to cover my bases just in case the court wished to consider otherwise.
But are you contending that the search warrant was facially invalid?
No, Your Honor.
Are you complaining or contending that the detective's entry onto the premises and sniffing around the door was illegal?
I don't believe so, no, Your Honor.
Okay.
The issue in the case is that the detective would not have even arrived there in the first place but for the officer's unlawful actions. The evidence was that the...
Curiosity, why didn't you challenge the detective actions if he was essentially doing the same thing that the two officers were?
The detective did not walk around the curtilage. He simply walked up to the front door. I don't recall if the evidence was clear how far he even got up the front door. But according to the evidence, as he was just walking up the front path to the front door, he smelled the marijuana, determined which dwelling it occurred in. Now, his case was a little different because, of course, he wasn't approaching every front door. He was approaching the specific trailer he was told to approach. And based on that, he was able to smell the marijuana, secure the search warrant.
Well, your position is the fact that he was there was an exploitation of the illegal or excessive search that was conducted previously.
Yes, Your Honor, exactly. And
would you agree that the affidavit for the search warrant was independent of what was found as a result of the illegal entry by the police officer, by the uniform officers?
I would agree it's independent in the sense that nothing mentioned by those officers was mentioned in the search warrant. If the detective had simply just shown up randomly to that location, smelled the marijuana, got a search warrant, that would have been sufficient. There would be no issue of it being fruit of a poisonous tree. The issue in this case is that the search warrant itself was obtained solely because of those officers' illegal actions. Detective Cusimano had no independent actions whatsoever before he had been called there specifically for this case.
If you assume for the sake of argument that this panel agrees with you in that respect, do you face any procedural bar whatsoever as a result of not challenging the warrant or the affidavit underlying the warrant?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, precisely because the warrant itself was the fruit of the legal search, and that's what was argued. It's not an issue that the officer who was taking out the warrant was lying in the warrant. He may have arguably omitted facts, which could have given rise to a Franks hearing. But the only fact he would have admitted was, I was called by these other officers. The issue in this case is the fact that he was called by these other officers.
So and your bottom line is the fruit of the poisonous tree is the detective's presence, Yes. Not anything that he did once he was there.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Okay.
And because of that, the warrant itself would not have been an independent source because the warrant was solely because of that original call to the scene. Additionally, I'll just address inevitable discovery was an argument that the Commonwealth raised on appeal. This is a case. There was no evidence in this case about a usual practice or what the officers would usually have done. There's no evidence that they would have gotten a search warrant to search the curtilage or search the home, but for the detective's actions. What they testified is they did this action, which was an unlawful entry onto the curtilage. They called the detective. So there's no foundation to presume based on that they would have done something differently in this case, but for this illegal action. The evidence seems to be that they followed along the path that they thought was best to investigate, but that path included a Fourth Amendment violation on the way. If the court has no other questions about that issue, I can move on briefly to sufficiency. Obviously, sufficiency is always a fact-intensive issue. The evidence in this case is the marijuana in question. There was marijuana being grown inside that trailer, and in fact, it was quite a large quantity of marijuana. Street value, if all of it could have been packaged and sold, was for a significant amount. I think those facts are not in dispute. What was in dispute was simply the amount that actually would have been viable. There's testimony that marijuana, when grown under less ideal conditions, doesn't necessarily have all the as smokable marijuana. Some of it's male marijuana, which has no THC whatsoever. So once you boil that and take all that into account, which the detective testified he did not take into account in forming his opinion, plus the fact that the marijuana was growing at different rates, so it could have been smoked at different times, there was a gap in the Commonwealth's evidence where the evidence could have supported the hypothesis that he planned to grow marijuana and smoke it over time. The fact that it was a large...
That's a factual matter, isn't it?
It is
the trial court rejected his testimony.
It's factual to a degree, Your Honor. That being said, every case concerning distribution always includes this factual determination one way or the other, and the courts have outlined factors to consider.
But in this particular case, in addition to the fact that the 179 plants were apparently for poor quality, there was also the matter of the scales, the AK-47, and the cash that was found.
Yes, Your Honor. And
not personal.
My argument there is obviously Mr. Carlson testified and explained that, but of course the court was not required to accept his testimony. But even then, certainly it's consistent with somebody who was selling, but I would submit to the court it doesn't rise to the level of excluding the theory that he was just using it for personal use and didn't want to get robbed along the way. I'll reserve the rest of my time unless the court has more questions.
Very well. Thank you. Ms. Lloyd?
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Ann Lloyd on behalf of the Commonwealth. It's the Commonwealth's position that the arrival of Detective Cusmano is not fruit of the poisonous tree in this case. The trial court, going to Judge Frank's question about the trial court's findings, the trial court specifically found that she didn't know. There wasn't any evidence about what was said to Detective Cusmano.
Can you speak up, please?
Yes, Detective Cusmano, when he arrived on the scene, we don't know what was said to him. We can assume the word marijuana was stated, and because of that, he arrived on the scene. However, the evidence about the presence of marijuana had already been gleaned before any entry onto the curtilage, whether legal or illegal. Obviously, the Commonwealth is arguing that it was a legal entry onto the curtilage. But that information about the presence of marijuana...
That's the Commonwealth's argument. How do you get past the judge's factual finding that it was an unlawful entry onto the curtilage?
I think that the judge's finding was perhaps not as clear as I would have wanted it to be. She found it was illegal, but she did not make any finding as to whether any exigency existed or did not exist. Everyone agreed, and the Commonwealth agreed, that it was the curtilage of the trailer that had...
But we don't need to get into probable cause or exigent circumstances if the trial court found it was an illegal entry.
I guess I would take a slightly different view than Your Honor. If the court... Without any explanation of why, in fact, it was illegal, it seemed that the trial court, from my reading of the record, and of course Your Honor can disagree, went straight from, this is curtilage, this is obviously illegal, this is bad. And there wasn't really a lot of argument about the probable cause to go on the curtilage.
What else could you interpret the trial court as meaning
Well, of course, the Corral Court meant I find that this entry is illegal. I guess my argument is that there was no particular finding about whether it was illegal because there was no probable cause, illegal because there was no exigency, or just because the trial court found, in general, it is illegal to go onto the curtilage.
What difference does it make for purpose of appeal?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear your question.
What difference does it make once the court made a ruling that it was an illegal entry? What difference does it make what the reasoning is, and why does that allow you to argue probable cause, inevitable discovery, exigent circumstances?
Yes, Your Honor. I think up on appeal, this court obviously reviews the law de novo as to whether the Fourth Amendment prevented this entry and this search or not. But the trial court's factual findings are obviously given a deferential review. Here, when she simply concludes, I find the officers overstepped their bounds, I believe those were her words that were in the record, I find the officers overstepped their bounds without any particular factual finding, that to me sounds like a legal conclusion that this court can review de novo and look at the facts and take up that probable cause and exigency. Well,
but for us to review de novo, someone would have had to have challenged that on appeal, and absent that, it becomes the law of the case, doesn't it? In this case, the officers overstepped their bounds, all right? Nobody's appealed that, so that's the law of the case, and we move from there.
Your Honor, I think that the error asserted by the defense bringing the judge's finding about whether it was okay for the officers to go in and whether the warrant was an independent source would bring that all before. Obviously, I inherited this case, but I am the Commonwealth here arguing today. I'm happy to take all your questions about it.
You win some, you lose some.
I hear that. But what I want to go to is more what you, Judge Frank, were talking about earlier, whether the warrant is a totally separate source. And so going back to the trial judge's findings about what was said or what we could know was told to the detective, and of course he testified at trial and testified very similarly with what the trial judge said that we could assume was told him, that there was marijuana in the area. So he comes straight up onto the porch. He doesn't do anything.
He goes straight to trailer 65.
He did go straight to trailer 65,
so obviously,
yes.
Obviously, he'd been told, come here, because the officer had already pretty much violated the curtilage of every other trailer before they got to trailer 65 and centralized it there.
Right. And
so this detective, we can certainly, there's a reasonable inference that he was told, come to this trailer.
Although, I would agree with that, but also he did also give statements at trial that everyone was clustered about trailer 65, and that's why he headed straight over there. So I do think it's a little ambiguous as to whether he was exactly told. It's not in the record one way or the other.
Of course, there's no evidence that Carlson was on the radar screen of narcotics or the Chesapeake Police Department before this detective is called out by the two officers who are found to have made unlawful entry.
There is no evidence of any prior surveillance or anything like that. However,
so how do you claim that he's there independently when the evidence is there that he's only there because he's called by these two officers?
Oh, I'm not saying that he just randomly decided to show up and sniff around in the air. What I'm saying is him making an entry onto the porch, which was perfectly legal under the Fourth Amendment, not conducting any special searches or anything like that, just merely standing on the front porch and breathing, was
he's there for an investigative purpose, isn't he?
So I think Your Honor is trying to, let's talk a little bit about Jardines, which is the case about going onto the porch with the dog with the investigative purpose.
And what I'm basically getting to is that if you assume there's an implied license here, despite the no trespassing signs, the implied license would be, for example, for a knock and talk or something like that. When you go on specifically with an investigative purpose, that's not consistent with the nature of the implied license, is it?
I would disagree with that. And so I would first, just to address the no trespassing signs just really quickly, there was absolutely no evidence that there was any notice of the no trespassing signs. Both officers said that I didn't even see it that day. One of the officers said, I didn't even notice it until I saw the picture here for court today. And so I think the no trespassing signs are a bit of a red herring. We don't even have pictures of them in the record to know what they looked like.
Not existing and not being seen are two different things, correct?
That's correct, but you have to be put on notice as far as an invitee that you're not welcome there, and it doesn't seem like anyone was being put on notice because no one could actually see the signs, and we, of course, can't judge what they looked like because we don't have a picture.
Since you mentioned the term invitee, that's a nice segue into what the implied license permits and doesn't permit.
That's right. So In this case, the officer, the detective, when he testified at trial, stated that he went directly up to the porch and did do that knock and talk, just like you were talking about. He didn't come and press his face to the door or anything like that. He went straight up to the porch, knocked, breathed in, smelled the marijuana, left, and got a search warrant. And so even if this court were against a fine, just like the trial court, that there was an illegal entry and that the detective would not have been there and his going and getting the search warrant and doing the right thing is not sufficiently independent to make the search warrant an independent reason for the search, I would argue that the Fourth Amendment exclusionary rule should not be applied in this case.
You said that he came up and he knocked, and then as he was knocking, he inhaled with marijuana. I'm looking at transcript of the detective's testimony, and that appears to be page 456 of the appendix. And the question is, and what did you do? He answers, I walked up to the trailer. It has like a little driveway. The trailer was facing me long ways. I walked up to what appeared to be the main entrance side door of the trailer. Walked up to the trailer door, and I could smell marijuana emanating from the edges of the door. Get down a couple of further questions. All right, and in response, did you knock on the door? Answer, I don't recall if I did or not. I know uniformed patrol did several times.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I must have misspoke. It was my belief that he had knocked on the door, and
does
I apologize
that
for that.
Does that change the analysis of the detective's testimony about implied license?
To me, Your Honor, it does not. Because specifically in Jardines, the court allowed for people to come up on the porch just like normal people, maybe if you were selling vacuums or something like that.
Not a drug dog to sniff.
Certainly, and
so
we don't.
What's the difference between the detective and the drug dog for purposes of the Fourth Amendment when it comes to sniffing around someone's door?
For purposes of the Fourth Amendment, the court has repeatedly held that the use of specialized tools, such as infrared scanners on the house or drug dogs, are going to reveal information that's not within the public orbit of information that's out there. This defendant was revealing his growth of marijuana to the entire neighborhood. It was so permeating that the officers could smell it from a couple blocks away. So in this case, they didn't use any special tool. The Supreme Court didn't say that when you walk up on a porch, which you're allowed to do as a police officer, you aren't allowed to breathe. He didn't do anything
allowed to do as a police officer for what purpose?
For the purpose of
being...
of being an invitee, of being able to go up on other people's porches.
But the invitee has certain limitations, doesn't it?
That's certainly correct.
An investigative purpose wouldn't fall within one of those
allowances,
would it?
It would be my point of view that it would be an investigative purpose using a special tool or going beyond what an invitee would normally do. An invitee would normally walk up to the porch, stand there, perhaps they would decide, oh, this house doesn't look like a good place to sell magazines, I'm going to turn around and not knock on the door. The officer engaged in all actions which a normal invitee would do.
But in concluding that, don't you have to ignore the very purpose for which he's there to begin with? That is, he's called by two uniformed officers who have violated the curtilage in order to sniff around the doors and windows and find the odor of marijuana. He's there to assist with a trailer where they've smelled drugs, and he walks up to do the very same thing.
Well, Hardinanez did not overturn the general rule that we don't look at the subjective intent of the officer when they get there. We look at their objective actions. Now, in Hardinanez, their objective actions of using the specialized tool to sniff at the door were not reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. Here, the officer's objective actions of walking up to the porch by himself, just merely standing on the porch with his own 2 feet for a moment and then turning around and walking away, those are not actions within the Fourth Amendment that are impermissible. And so I would ask the court not to apply the exclusionary rule in this case, even if you find that all of this behavior that we've talked about is bad and that the officers should not have been doing it, they should have handled it another way. I would suggest to you that the exclusionary rule should not be applied in this case because it's supposed to deter bad behavior. And so the question is, what were the officers supposed to do here? Were they supposed to merely ignore the permeating smell of marijuana in this case? It would make an easier argument for me if they maybe had done some different actions than they did in this case. But what were they supposed to do? The Fourth Amendment requires reasonableness, and it requires a warrant. And, of course, I'm here today arguing that we've got both here, that the officer's actions for the situation they faced were reasonable, and that then they did the right thing, and they got a warrant, and they did not make entry into the house, which, of course, I argue that they could have with probable cause and exigency. They could have come right in the door. They did not do that. Instead, they waited, they got a warrant, and they made entry that way. I'd like to touch on the sufficiency assignment of error just quickly for the court. So what we have here is between 152 and 176, I believe it was, individual marijuana plants. We know that those plants had given off at least 1 pound and one quarter of material which contained marijuana. That's from the lab in this case. That was, if you recall from the appendix, that very large bag that the defendant had chopped off all of the plants while he was waiting for the police to make entry.
Say, was there evidence that there was some flushing that had gone on?
Yes, Your Honor. And I printed a color picture because I didn't think you could see it as well in the appendix. The toilet is absolutely full of marijuana. They did not collect that material. They left it in the toilet. There was even more marijuana. And so I would submit on this evidence alone, even if we don't start thinking about the growth rate and how much this is going to put off and the scale of the operation that he has going on in there, that it certainly was sufficient evidence that he intended to have this marijuana, not simply for his own personal use. If there are any more questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you for hearing my argument.
Thank you very much.
I think I could be brief about this. Regarding, once again, just to harp on the independence of Detective Cusimano, Judge Atlee, I believe you turned to page, I think you said 456. On the page right before that in the transcript, Detective Cusimano specifically testifies, I was contacted by uniformed patrol to assist with a trailer that they smelled marijuana. I think that makes it very clear, but even before that, the other officers had testified that Detective Cusimano got a search warrant based on what the officers had told him as well as what he had observed. So I think between those two pieces of information.
Is that pure speculation?
Which? What those officers testified to?
We can assume that the police told him about the marijuana. The evidence, as I understand it, was the minute he got to the scene, he smelled it.
The testimony of those other officers was basically that they had told him, and in addition, Detective Cusimano's testimony was that he was contacted to assist with a trailer where they smelled, or that they smelled marijuana. Between those two pieces of information, I don't believe it's speculative. Certainly, when the challenge was to the warrantless search that was initially present, the burden would have been on the Commonwealth to have cleared up that speculation, which they did not do, to clear up the ambiguity. Regarding the exclusionary rule and the Commonwealth's arguments meant to deter bad behavior, Collins v. Virginia from the U.S. Supreme Court that recently came out makes clear that the curtilage receives exactly the same protections as the home. If the officers had went into the home under these circumstances, I don't think there would be any dispute that the exclusionary rule should apply in this case. Because they enter the curtilage, the same requirements apply. So I would submit, I would ask the court to reverse and remand this case based on that evidence. Any other questions? Thank you, Andrew.
In keeping with the tradition of this court, we will step down and greet counsel, and then we'll take up the case of JES.